Hi, and welcome to Matrix Moments. This episode is actually a fun one. Commerce has actually exploded. So Avi, this one is creatively titled Commerce 10.0, Crystal Ball Gazing. I think commerce, frankly, through the pandemic has just exploded across the globe. And in many ways, people feel that multiple years of the growth that they expected in commerce has actually been pulled in. In your view, is this just a developed market phenomena? How much of this is likely going to sustain? And whatever we are seeing in India, how long do you think this is going to play out?
Yeah, I wish I knew, which is why we call it N.O, because we don't know what version it is, how long it will take. You know, the joke about forecasts, if you don't give a timeline to it, it will be eventually right. But before we go there, Rajender, you've worked in almost every sector for us. You've led almost every sector. So I know you have a lot of context. So this should be as interactive as we can make it. And Saloni has done fantastic research. You guys started making me do these deep episodes around. We did moats, we did marketplaces, we did, which was the other one?
Margins.
Marginal value add. And I think this is the fourth, and we'll do another one and a few more. And it it takes a lot of research, but frankly, my workload gets cut 80% because of the work done by the team. The other thing is, I have to tell you that all of us need motivation once in a while. And I was fatigued out of doing these episodes. And then Abhiraj of Urban Company messaged saying, you know, I've been listening to these, the three we mentioned, on my runs. And it was very motivating for a founder that I look up to acknowledge it actually has given more motivation to do it. So that's it. Now, coming to your topic, you know, there's that Lenin's saying, I may get the exact wordings wrong, but there's decades where nothing happens and weeks in which decades happen, obviously. In his context, it was related to revolution. But I think we should include this e-commerce chart, e-commerce penetration in the US retail chart. It is actually fascinating, scary, encouraging, a lot of things, right? So it shows, mota moti, 10% in 2010, and it goes up. So e-commerce as a percentage of US retail, 10%, let's say in 2010, goes up by 1 percentage point every year, or right? And then it goes from 16 pre-pandemic, so clearly I'm not getting the numbers fully right, 16 to 26. So a decade has happened in 3 weeks, and this happened in the month of April to May, right? Remember, in India, there was a lockdown of e-commerce. In the US, there was no lockdown of e-commerce. So there was a little bit of acceleration. So it's just amazing. I think in India, what happened, first, there was a lockdown even for e-commerce, so it was a little bit slower. But I'll tell you that similar inflection has happened. Exactly what the penetration has gone up, we will know after the fact. There, it's much easier to track. Here, it's a little bit harder to track. India was probably at 3-4% before, probably doubled. I was talking to people at Flipkart, Amazon. They were expecting sales to go in growth rate to be higher off a higher base, 60 to 80%. We have seen a proliferation of D2C brands. Yeah. There is this new nomenclature called NANF, which is not Amazon, non-Flipkart, which is, with all due respect to them, they are important platforms, but this is an important long-tailing happening. But I'll tell you something important, at least in my analysis. I think if this had happened in 2018, we wouldn't have seen this level of acceleration. I think we have to recognize that 2016 Jio launched, 2016 Demon happened and payments started coming online. Then the true adoption of broadband internet really started kicking in 18 and 19. TikTok, which has been banned, I think it exploded the usage in India. And it is a very important factor. People became comfortable with content. There is a classic, you move from content communication to commerce, right? It's a classic thing, and it really accelerated. WhatsApp accelerated communication, TikTok accelerated content. People were primed, they were ready. If this had happened before, it wouldn't have been like this. So I think because of this, it's sticky. Because if it wasn't for the fact that you are using this anyway, and now you have graduated, and there is UPI, and there is all of that stuff, I think it is going to be sticky. It is slowing a little bit right now, but I think it will be sticky because people have tasted blood, and blood being convenience or discovery. And I think that's why it will be sticky.
And I'd add also, I think the whole last mile fulfillment network, especially in smaller towns, honestly, wouldn't have been as strong as it is today. Two, 3 years ago, the TAT was still 2, 3, 4 days versus now it's sub two, which is actually a big trigger.
And actually, you know, on that note, just on the economics of the business also, it's important. Because the market had deepened, in India, we have always joked about it's the reverse of the outsourcing business model, which is dollar cost and rupee revenues, right? Here, the CAC has also come to a level where you can make money. D2C brands in our portfolio are EBITDA positive, right? Which again, 2, 3 years ago, market was not deep enough, so your CAC would have been too high. So I think it all kind of comes together, knock on wood, sticks.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, I was actually speaking to someone at Flipkart as well, and they were saying that for the first time, the non-top 100 cities actually accounts for now greater than or almost 50% of their business. Yeah, wow. And that trend is actually accelerating, which seems to suggest that the behavior and the habit formation is now real in outside of just the, you know, top 100 cities that we all relate to. So fingers crossed that this is long lasting. I'm just curious. I think, you know, we've spoken of Flipkart, Amazon. Is it a market where you think that, you know, clearly the horizontals have very deep capabilities, they've got the customer base, they've actually kind of captured the mega trend around commerce. And in some ways, maybe some verticals, maybe some consumer brands, but really it's the incumbents who've kind of really benefited. If I was a new entrepreneur looking at commerce, should I look back at this period of 9 months and think, oh shit, I should have actually been there, call it 2 years ago? Or should I feel motivated saying, you know what, actually new market opportunities have opened up?
Look, I clearly believe, so there's this Goldman Sachs report that talks about $100 billion of incremental total GMV by in the next 3-4 years. And people do talk about the big guys taking 70-80% of it, right? But the question is, where's the value creation? Right. So I have multiple perspectives. I think e-commerce is the largest. What are the largest market cap companies in the world? Bunch of them are e-commerce, whether it's Amazon, whether it's Alibaba, Tencent has pieces of it. So I think it is one of the largest markets globally. And in India also, it's coming, and a lot of value creation is going to happen. But let's take that argument. Let's say that. How much market share do market leaders typically have at most?
Top 2, 3, maybe 60-70%.
And they are saying 100 billion of value creation. Is 20-30 billion enough for you?
Sounds interesting.
So you should be starting, right? So I think that's the overall point, which happens, by the way, in financial services, in consumer brands. These are so deep and wide that one company cannot cater to all buying experiences and all selling experiences, okay? So therein lies the thought behind some of what we are going to discuss, that where can you disrupt? Where are those gaps and white spaces? And recognize that you're going up against these 800-pound gorillas, right? But Walmart itself was worried about getting disrupted by Amazon. And now Walmart is obviously owner of Flipkart, right? So market dynamics change. So I think that is very, very critical. In my view, in e-commerce in particular, having been an e-commerce entrepreneur, what I would look at is there a demand side disruption possible for me to create a separate company, or is there a supply side disruption? Let's take the example of furniture, where we know we have some companies, some have done well, some have not done well. It is a fragmented, non-standard supply chain, and it is a beauty lies in the eye of the beholder demand side. It's the ultimate category where you can have a vertical, right? So I think that's how you have to think about it. And I think when you think about it, it kind in that way, ultimately, you will be able to create something which may, by catering to a certain set of customers, be worth a few billion dollars. There are two fundamental paradigms that are disrupting commerce in my view. One is interactive commerce, which we'll talk about, which in a simplistic way is to think about TikTok of commerce. And the second is D2C brands. Now, when you say 70-80% of the business is going to Flipkart and Amazon, let's say it does, which brands are they selling? So one can actually capture that market cap through having your own brands. One can capture that market cap through logistics. One can capture that market cap through B2B. One can capture that market cap through payments. So a lot of times when things are happening, we miss that these things are not happening in isolation. So yes, two answers. One, 20, 30 billion is still available, just in commerce. And two, that 70, 80 billion has other enablers which it is driving in market cap creation. So I think that's how I would look at it.
Yeah, I think you've called out two. I'd say the third, at least trend globally, is, you know, the call it the Shopify Forex story. Clearly, Shopify is on a tear globally. I think in India, some version of that trend will also play out,
yeah,
where you're kind of enabling the rebels, so to speak, the ones who believe in the macro trend but don't believe in the platforms and want to enable smaller guys to win.
Yeah. So, and I think we'll cover some of that in our B2B chat, but absolutely, and we have invested behind that trend also.
Yeah. So you brought up this, you know, interactive commerce point, and you said, you know, ticked off of commerce, and immediately it kind of got me kind of curious. We've had different versions of those conversations internally. Some people think of it more in terms of, you know, just the content layer. Some people think about it in terms of the entire selling experience. Which one do you believe in?
I think it's the demand side. And I think if you step back, let's look at the history of retail. And I think retail is getting disrupted. But India, we never really went through that cycle of modern trade. I mean, we did, but we never had the Walmart scale and stuff like that, right? But all of us have visited supermarkets overseas. And what is the structure of a supermarket? The structure of a supermarket is you walk through aisle after aisle. You have a list with you, and you keep going and getting stuff. And then what happens? On the way out, there's a bunch of stuff that is sitting there which you never had a plan to buy, and you're picking it off. So there is intent and there is impulse, okay? In countries like India and China, impulse is actually very big. In our cultural DNA, I remember growing up, we would go to the markets or the bazaars without any intent. It was like a social outing, and then you go into one store and then you get something, and it's actually socializing. Where is that on the horizontals? Where is impulse on the horizontals? Horizontals cannot cater to impulse. By definition, intent-driven commerce is lots of SKUs. I should be able to come and search and find anything I want. That's what we do. By definition, impulse-based commerce is fewer items, packaged very well, looking interesting. Impulse-based commerce is your TV-based shopping also. You know, people are, and by the way, it's coming in live streaming too. So I think that's the distinction. If you ask me, there is a massive trend happening, in my view, of the bazaar experience coming online. Okay? And that can happen only because of video and voice. And that's the why now of this. Without video, which is why TikTok of commerce. When you are in that video thing, imagine now, it's just a live stream of one product after another, or that same person who you're watching and laughing about then suddenly pulls out a brand that you should buy. Let's look at China. So Alibaba market cap last, I haven't checked, but maybe 600-700 billion. JD, which started around maybe a decade ago, is 130 billion. Guess what PDD is, Pinduoduo, 200 billion. Happened in the last 5 years. So I think a lot. So this interactive commerce, in my view, is a mega trend. And I think it is a mega trend coming parallelly or being developed in parallel fashion globally, because video has come at the same time for everybody, right? So I think that's a big opportunity. And in my view, that's where the big market cap can get created, because there the metaphors, I'm just referring to my notes, you know, personalization I didn't talk about. One of the things that is less, I think, now appreciated enough about ByteDance, given what happened with the US in spinning out TikTok, they said this personalization technology is a national security for China.
Yeah. I mean, it's ready to like block an acquisition just for that.
Now, so I think personalization, live feed, video, where are all these tools on the horizontals? And the horizontals know it. And they have experiments running. But now it's the same incumbent issue. No? The disruptor is now the incumbent. And now they have to grow month over month and GMV and all of that. And it's hard. So I think it's a massive trend. I think very large companies are going to get created here. I would say in our portfolio, Daily Hunt has a little bit of that, you know, it has not a little bit meaning, shot at this. Josh is doing really well. And I think you can add commerce to that, right? So,
and actually, coincidentally, the impulse-driven categories also tend to be higher margin. And so in some ways, you can actually potentially make even more money if you get it right.
That's a good thought. I didn't think of it. They are generally very high margin. And then if you layer the economics in, if you're already consuming content and then you're getting into this impulse shopping, the CAC is zero because you're already there.
Yeah.
Right? So assuming that you have this, so I think that's the big idea.
Yeah, no, interesting for sure. We've seen a few. We haven't seen enough innovation as yet, but I'm quite optimistic, actually.
Yeah. On that, Rajinder, one point I'll make is what we just discussed about ByteDance. This is as much about data science and technology as it is about commerce. And I don't think in the ideas we have seen, people have understood it. That personalization, that feed, you know, putting up somebody up for live feed is one thing, but just understand that what has been perfected in this is the art of showing what is the next video that you will watch. And the MOTS, the minutes of time spent, which is measured in media, is probably the most important metric for you to get the ultimate commerce right. And I think that gets missed.
Yeah, no, I think another perhaps reason is many people kind of think of interactive maybe in the same way they think of social. And when they think of social, they think WhatsApp, they think PDD.
Yeah.
So is the macro thought then, like, should people just copy PDD and layer on something on top of it?
Yeah. And by the way, if I knew the answers, I wouldn't be running this firm. I would be creating the next $10 billion PDD for India, whatever, $30 billion. People can try to copy PDD, but they won't succeed. And we have done some work on this, and I'll tell you what the thought is. The thought is that PDD is built on three pillars: demand aggregation, logistics, and kind of just-in-time manufacturing, like very lean supply chains. Okay. Now, which of these apply to India? So demand aggregation for PDD actually started because there were a mini program on WeChat. So WeChat already had the audience, and WeChat, by the way, has spawned a number of independent companies through the mini programs. So because there was a set of people on WeChat, demand aggregation was easy, so they introduced the group buying feature. Where do you do that here? Which is why I'm optimistic about Daily Hunt and Josh having a shot at it, right? So there is that piece. Then you say logistics. Now, these are low AOV items, toilet paper, fruits, all kinds of daily consumption stuff. Logistics as a percentage of the value of the product in India tends to be 10-15% for these low AOV, maybe even higher. China is, we all know, we are envious of the machine that works, right, for logistics. Another problem. Payments in India work well, so that's not a problem. Third problem is just manufacturing. So a lot of these are just-in-time manufactured. I mean, China is the cradle of civilization now in manufacturing. So I don't think any of these apply. Now, that said, the thought applies. And then the question is, how do you apply that thought? And I think DealShare in our portfolio is doing a fantastic job. And I, you know, we just announced a new round of funding there. So what are they doing? The proxy for demand aggregation. So they are doing gamification, personalization. I think they can do a lot more, which they should. But the proxy that they are using for demand aggregation is B2B. So B2B also aggregates demand, but only do B2B for SKUs that you want to do B2C in. So you're just giving more demand to the suppliers. On the manufacturing, actually, as it turns out, there are great regional brands and manufacturers who don't have national access. So they are bringing that. And these guys are not bad. They are not as streamlined as maybe China. But again, we have now the whole MSME initiative and all of that. So I think they are really riding that really well. So that's on demand and that's on supply. Logistics, very hard to solve. So what are they doing? They have this concept of DealShare Dukan. DealShare Dukan, where you aggregate. So it is your mom and pop stockist. It could be a work from home entrepreneur who's stocking the products and delivering locally. Now, if you look at Country Delight, one of the big innovations is that we deliver 1 liter of milk at 3 rupees or 4 rupees delivery because you are aggregating in a certain density and delivering to apartments, right? As opposed to normally it would be 50, 60 rupees per delivery. Dealshare Dukan does that. So innovation in each is how I think you get close to PDD. Now, of course, categories are very similar. It's staples and so I think that's one shot. The other shot where you might have a point of view, I'm actually still positive that in fruits and vegetables, you can do this because higher margin. And something I learned from Hari Menon, by the way, at Big Basket, he said industry-wide FNB wastage is 17-18%. Big Basket, I don't think he'll care that I'm giving out the number. It's a positive thing. It's single digits. And it's because I didn't think of this, but every time you touch a fruit or vegetable, you add 2.23% of wastage and perishability. So therefore, incumbents are actually at a disadvantage in that category because they have this structure of warehousing, multiple points, hubs and spokes, and that supply chain potentially increases wastage. So I'm optimistic that, and you know that in China lately, there have been a lot of companies funded in just fruits and vegetables doing this
more. Actually, the pandemic in some ways actually created a new behavior almost. I remember in Bangalore, in Bombay, I heard like enough people saying there are these farmers who are now aggregating and coming to local communities. There's like a neighborhood organizer who's creating these, you know, shop-in-shop WhatsApp experiences, groups, WhatsApp groups so that people can buy groceries. Actually, in some ways, I'm wondering some of that behavior in FNV may actually sustain. And there could be interesting companies that capture and layer onto that behavior, but build a business model around it.
Very important also because we also buy from some of these, you know, more organic, less processed kind of farms. And always my wife used to buy them at, all these clubs that we are all members of. There, they have these shops, the grocery shops or a Nature's Basket. Now, these farms have become, they are not fully direct to consumer, but they are tech enabled now. Yeah. So now you're buying with them on WhatsApp. This is ripe for disruption. They have built the last mile logistics. So they are doing the aggregation. They need somebody who figures out the front end and aggregates it. So I think the supply side is ready. And I think it could be an interesting category.
Yeah, no, and it's a massive category with lots of margin. I'm going to switch to the other topic that you started out with. After Interactive, the big other macro trend was actually D2C. And in some ways, the pandemic has just given like a clear boost to many brands. We've made a few investments here, so I'm guessing our portfolio is in decent shape. But what's your prognosis on what the medium-term view is on the space?
I love how you've slipped in that our portfolio is in decent shape, marketed. We love all our investments. All portfolios are in decent shape, but it's never that easy. See, ultimately, commerce is an aggregation of brands. You're buying. So obviously, this is on the supply side, right? We spoke about the demand side, like you said. So I think that's definitely the case. I'm not going to bring any new insight to this. D2C brands are exploding. And we have a bunch of investments and we'll talk through them. I'll tell you where I see the gap. I think that in the world of interactive commerce, a D2C brand needs to come alive. Okay? In the world of passive commerce, search commerce, which is where I'm going on Amazon and I'm still buying that D2C brand, I think it's fine. But I think in the world of interactive commerce, I don't think that the brands have thought this through as well. I think brands today are at next level of interactivity, but I don't think it's an interactivity, which is Instagram posts, videos, and some of them are doing fantastic job, but I don't think it brings the brand alive. Do I have the answer to how they come alive? I don't know. I have some thoughts. Some companies have done a great job where you buy something, you scan a QR code, you get a video, you get a gift, you do something which is interactive. Instagram posts are largely one way and likes and dislikes. So I think there is more to do here on by the brands. But I'll tell you what the big idea here for me, which I think has not been fully figured out, is interactive Zara on steroids. Or why Zara on steroids because of interactivity. What did Zara pioneer? Most people would know. But Zara had this concept of mind to market in 2 weeks, I think, something like that. So if people don't know, you know, they used to have their buyers sitting in New York Fashion Week, liking something that has been displayed, some star sketch artist sketching it, it going in those days by fax to ships which had tailors, ships off the coast of Spain. And the tailors would start stitching and the ship would sail towards its destination. That's how you get to market. If you have to get to New York City, the ship would sail by the time the fashion week is over. That's how they did it, right? Imagine a world in, on the internet, this should be so much easier. I think there's a massive businesses to be built. I just saw yesterday Stitch Fix's stock went up. It's now a $6 billion company, somewhat of a similar idea. But I you know, the term is C2M, consumer to manufacturer. I, as the consumer, tell you what I want. What world do we live in today, manufacturer to consumer? You as a manufacturer tell me what I should buy and where I should buy and the distribution. Can I, as a consumer, control this? And I think it will be done. And I think it is going to happen. And I think it's a big idea. Also, it is a very interesting business because typically consumers pay you in advance. It's very low inventory. It's very high return on capital. So I think this could be interesting. I'll also say that because we speak a lot about founders, I think the founder archetype here is very different. This is not your classic. This is a very design-led founder. And the category is also different, right? So clearly, clothing, apparel, jewelry. You have to be a design first. And it is a design factory that just churns out so many SKUs, but bespoke, right?
Actually, now thinking about it, Avi, if I'm being intellectually honest, data also suggests that D2C brands have faced some challenges, at least in the developed markets. If I think about Casper, a couple of other mattress company brands, all of their stock prices are actually, you know, down. So what gives, like what's leading to some models working and others not?
Yeah. So, you know, Casper was actually the darling, and maybe Warby Parker pioneered. Then what was the other one? Dollar Shave Club. So I think those two pioneered, and then it was Casper, which was the darling because they really perfected the marketing of it, right? With those Hollywood parties and unboxing experience. I think in the internet and in disruption and innovation in general, you always go through these cycles, right? And then the hard questions get asked. And I think in Casper's case, just the US context is so different, which is that mattresses, supply chains are broken, supposedly very high margin for retailers, which is why in the US you have these, you know, everywhere you'll find 20 mattress stores, and I think Casper tried to do some disruption. Here's where I think the view was wrong. The view was that a direct-to-consumer brand, to be a brand, you have to have 60 to 90% of sales from your own website. And because otherwise you're just dependent on somebody else. Now, where the nuance got missed was not, is that 60 to 90% free traffic or is it paid traffic? And what happened with a lot of these sites is they went so strong on site that the LTV to CAC, and then obviously competition came in, because the problem with D2C is also competition can come in very quickly. The margins didn't work, the business models didn't work. In India, we actually have the view that building a business on marketplaces is fine. Now, I can argue that it's risky, but it's like it's another form of distribution. India has actually skipped the full organized retail and you've gone straight to marketplaces. I was talking to Aman Gupta of Boat yesterday. He's built his entire business. Now it's 15-20% offline, but he's built his entire business of marketplaces. So I think that's where I think the thought was wrong. So we are happy to build, for our companies to build businesses. Economics has to make sense. And that's where Google and Facebook got rich, because all these brands spent very heavily to have 60, 80, 90% traffic on site, and the economics didn't work. By the way, you also have to do all the other hard work, logistics, warehousing, which, you know, in marketplaces you don't have to. So I think it's a tricky balance, but I am actually very positive on marketplaces driven brands, but with one caveat. The caveat is what we discussed earlier, brands have to come alive. They also have to have a connect with the customer. If I'm going on Amazon and I'm buying cookies, and therefore I'm buying a particular brand, versus I'm going on Amazon and buying open secret cookie, and that's what I'm searching, is very different things. And in fact, some of our brands like Oziba, Open Secret, bunch of them that are in marketplaces, Man Matters, they actually track, Dimensh, they track the number of searches of their own keyword. So in the world of marketplaces, that indicates a brand to me. And obviously, ultimately, you have to look at cohorts and the habit-forming indicators we have discussed before. One thing I learned from Aman of Boat is the importance of communities in building a brand. So he calls them boat heads. I think that's awesome, right? So he mentioned how his biggest moment was when he walked into a bar or was in a bar and somebody walked in with the boat headphones. It became a fashion accessory. That's, so it is not where you are selling. It is how you are connecting with the consumer. So I don't think it matters whether you're selling on your site or you're selling on Amazon, but have you made that connect? And they invested in the communities. He would call them personally, he would set up events, this boat heads became like a, so that's where the onus comes in building a brand.
No, interesting. Actually, phenomenal success story.
Yeah.
I think looking across our portfolio, how do you feel we are placed across this equation?
Yeah, look, it's always a work in progress. I think we had discussed, I think in an episode with Sanjot about DinWebs, right? Digitally native, vertically integrated brand. And I think Country Delight is a great example of that. I don't think there is a more digitally native because they go and deliver themselves and vertically integrated because they have the supply themselves and processing than Country Delight. I think overall we have good exposure in food and nutrition. We have Country Delight, Oziva, The Whole Truth, And Me, Open Secret. We also have products from Mosaic, which is Man Matters, as in food. In personal care, we are a little bit underweight. We'd like to be more. But we have Mosaic, which will be a house of brands. They've got Bodywise now, which has launched for women. There's obviously Dimensh. Fashion, we have Chumbak. So I think work in progress. I believe that we could be 2x of this portfolio or 3x of this portfolio and yet feel pretty good about it, because we are in a decade-long trend. There are going to be a number of brands known 10 years from now, which will be tens of thousands of crores, tens of thousands of crores. You know, for example, a boat is already thousands of crores, which are still getting created, right? So it's very exciting. I think in terms of overall theme of what we spoke about, the interactive commerce, we spoke about deal share, then we spoke about, you were talking about Shopify and B2B2C, we have Dukaan. We also have a bunch of these vertical focused, so business in B2B, which is riding the wave, and we'll talk more in the other episode, but riding really the wave of how do you sell on marketplaces or retail with stuff like that. Enablers, you invested in Loadshare, SaaS, we have Moinges that is helping a bunch of these brands. So my view is, again, from the first question you asked, or maybe second or third, there are a number of ways to capture this $200-300 billion of market cap that's coming. And I hope one of the things that this episode does for prospective founders is get them excited that it ain't over. It's just starting. And it's going to be very, very interesting. And there's billions of dollars to be made if nothing else motivates you.
Thanks, Avi. Awesome chatting as always.
Great. Likewise. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. For more Matrix Moments episodes, you can head to www.matrixpartners.in/blog. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.